This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. Well, when you have a moment, check out my Facebook page, Radio Joy on Paper, and let me know if you have an author that you would like me to invite on the program. And I will be happy to do so, and then you might even call in during the program and talk to them. I am so happy today. I have a very, very special guest, and I have a song for her. So I'm going to play that. All right. Laura, are you there?
Yes, I'm
here. Okay, I'm playing a song for you, then I'm going to come back and tell everybody about you. Okay, Laura, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, it's wonderful. I want to tell all of my listeners that I have on the phone with me Laura Resnick. Now, my listeners, of course, know that I'm in love with your father. So they're ready for this because every time I get him on the program, I start giggling and laughing and talking about how I spend many evenings with him. But I want to tell you, I am so thrilled to have you on the program. Of course, you yourself are an award-winning author. You won the John W. Campbell Award for Best New Writer in Sci-Fi back a number of years ago. And
before the dinosaurs left the earth.
Not that long, because I tell you, I feel like I found a treasure. Now, I've been talking to your dad for the past 2 years, and he... Mm-hmm. He never mentioned until the last interview where he started talking about how proud he is of you and about how you started writing. And it was, and I felt so bad that I had not read your books. And then I get your book. Well, I decided to start with the Doppelgangster because I just love the name.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to as I'm reading it, I'm saying, oh my gosh, what a treasure. How have I missed this wonderful book? And it, one morning I was in the doctor's office in one of those waiting rooms, you know, where everybody's looking miserable at 8 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there laughing my head off and people are looking at me like, you know, what's she reading there? And I couldn't stop laughing. This book is so funny.
That's wonderful to hear. That's wonderful to hear. I always say that doing something like sitting in a miserable doctor's office at 8 a.m., that's like the perfect use for one of my books. That's where you should have one.
Exactly. I mean, they should say, okay, you have a doctor's appointment. We'll keep you waiting for hours. We don't care about you, but at least we're going to give you this wonderful book by Laura Resnick, and you won't mind.
Yeah, and then when we do see you, we're going to stick needles in you and tell you to lose weight. You definitely need to brace yourself for seeing the doctor.
You are really, as I said, as I'm reading it, I'm saying she is a treasure. She is a treasure.
That's very kind. Thank you.
No, this is, of course, I started with this book. This Doppelgangster is your number two in your series here,
mm-hmm.
about Esther Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
I love this character.
Oh, I'm glad.
I think some of it is based on your experiences as an actress?
Not really. No? I mean, some of it is inspired by, you know, things I've dealt with. Like in the fifth book, she's in retail hell at Christmas, and anyone who's ever had a job at Christmas has been through that. So there are things in there that are reminiscent of what I've been through. But my sojourn in acting was very, very short. I have friends who are still actors, so there are things that are inspired by their experience. I have a couple of friends who, although they were sort of skilled classical actresses, when they were in their 20s, they were always hired for roles which involve running around in their underwear. So that's one of the reasons Esther, for all that she is very skilled, frequently gets cast in roles where she's not wearing enough clothing and complains about it and things like that.
Well, so. one of my favorite lines in your book, I'm going to try to read it. I'm not a heroine. I just play heroines. Also psychotics, vamps, orphans, hookers, housewives, and on one memorable occasion, a singing rutabaga. Now, I love that line. First of all, because I'm from Michigan and we eat a lot of rutabagas.
Oh.
And I had never seen a singing rutabaga, but that's a wonderful line.
I am years ago, my best friend was hired to play one of the animated characters at a big amusement park around here called Kings Island. And gosh, the name of the character has just gone out of my head. We were teenagers at the time, but it was a shark. So she spent all summer in our hot, humid Midwestern summer roaming around this very hot amusement park dressed as a shark. So she had no arms all summer and could barely walk. And there's this big story I remember about how at some point, you know, a family's fighting and one of them accidentally whaps her while waving their arms and knocks her down a hill. And one of the children goes with her and they're rolling down a hill together. So I wanted to use the shark costume, but I had, in fact, already used that years ago in a completely different book. So I thought, what other humiliating, armless, non-human thing could Esther Diamond play? And rutabaga was what I came up with.
That's perfect. I love it. When I got to that one, of course, that's in the first book, Desperately Disappearing Nightly.
Yeah, Disappearing Nightly. A lot of people actually read the second book, Doppelgangster, first, sometimes actually because they did like the title. But the series had a weird publishing history. I came up with the idea for the series and wrote the proposal, which is like the first few chapters of the book and an overview of the first book, and you write an overview of the series. And gave that to my then literary agent. And this was a long time ago. I think this was way back in the 1990s. And he submitted it to three publishers. They all rejected it. He declared it was unsaleable and refused to ever send it out again. And in my experience, that's what literary agents do. They send it to a couple of buddies. And if those buddies don't buy it, most agents just quit at that point and won't keep trying. Which is one of the reasons I don't work with literary agents anymore. But anyhow, so the book just sat around for years, and every time I would bring it up, like, you know, hey, why don't we try this again? He would just bite my head off. After I fired him, I thought, well, you know, he would never send this out. Why don't I try? What have I got to lose? And within 3 weeks, I had a good offer for it from a publisher. So we made a deal, and I wrote the first book, and I remember they were having trouble figuring out how to package it, what sort of cover to put on it, and I said, you know, I've worked with a lot of publishers on this, I've really, you know, learned a lot about what works in a cover, can I speak to your art department, can I speak with the art director? No, at this house we don't let writers do that. So they wouldn't communicate with me at all about the cover, and the editor gets the cover, and she admitted to me, she said, okay, it's so bad, I won't show it to you. I'm going to tell them to go back to the drawing board. We need something else. So they come up with a second one, and it's so bad, they won't show it to the editor. So we've now been through this twice. We're getting pretty close to one. We really have to have a cover for the book. The book's due in store soon. And they do a third cover, and she shows it to me, and it's absolutely awful. And I was at home when I thought I just started crying because I thought, you know, I worked so hard to get this book published, and this cover is going to kill it. This cover is just awful, and I know they won't do another one because this is their third one. So they publish the book, and sure enough, sales are terrible, and sometime while I'm close to finishing the second book, they cancel the contract because, guess what? Sales weren't good on the first book. What a shock. Who could possibly have guessed? And so I thought the series was dead at that point, and the agent, again, who I then had, who had gone on and hired, that agent also thought the series was dead and didn't want to talk about it or have anything to do with it, or it immediately turned out anything to do with me, now that I'd had a contract canceled. So I left that agent, and every literary agent I talked to, I sent my resume and samples to about 10 agents after that. Nobody would have anything to do with it. Everybody said, yeah, this can't be sold, and, you know, I don't think you can be sold again either. So I sent it out myself again, this time with the second book of a series where the first book had been published elsewhere and done terribly. And I sent it to Betsy Wolheim at Daw Books. They're a very old science fiction fantasy house. They've been around at this point for, gosh, it's 60 years, maybe a long time. The company was founded by her father. They are distributed by Penguin Random House, so they have fabulous distribution. That's the biggest commercial publishing conglomerate in the world. And she called me within 3 weeks and made me a good offer and loved it and said, we will figure out how to make this work, how to relaunch a series with a second book. And when you can get the rights back to the first book, we'll acquire that one, too. And she followed through and did all of that, and they've done such a good job of publishing the books. The seventh one came out a while ago. I'm working on the eighth. I'm contracted there through the 10th. So it all came out really well in the end, but it was a really long road to get there.
Well, it is quite amazing. As you said, the doppelganger... First, the cover is great. It's wonderful.
The covers for these, all of them except Disappearing Nightly, even the reissue, all of them are done by an artist named Dan DeSantos, who's wonderful, and he kind of really gets that combination of menace, sexiness, and comedy that you need in the covers. And whenever I see what he's done, I'm always amazed. And this is, Daw Books is a house that actually does let the author get involved in this process if they want, and I do want. So I'm able to have direct contact with Dan and, you know, give him a synopsis of the book, and I give him a lot of images that I find online of things that were in my head while writing the book so he can kind of see inside my head. And he just always comes up with just these amazing images that really kind of convey the whole flavor and tone of each book so well. So he does a great job.
Well, you and your father have fantastic brains, because I always tell him that, you know, I want to do one of those miniature little submarines and float around in his brain, because it must be just sparkling like a psychedelic masterpiece.
All right, I have to tell you, my father is a person who is maximally challenged by spreading peanut butter on bread. There was, people always like, aren't you so intimidated to have this brilliant father? I'm like, you've never lived with him. I know he is a great writer, but honestly, if my mother like goes away or, you know, is in hospital overnight or something, he cannot boil cream of wheat. So there are limitations to that genius.
Well, he's so delightful, and I love Lucifer Jones. Of course, those are his contribution to comedy.
Yeah.
And
Lucifer Jones is a great character.
Oh, absolutely fantastic. And you are so, you know, of course, your writing, it's fast paced and it's funny. I love Connor Lopez.
Oh, Lopez.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he is a wonderful character.
I'm glad you think so. It's kind of funny. When I first signed with Daw Books, Betsy wasn't so sure about him. She thought, I don't know, maybe we should get Esther a different boyfriend. I don't know about this. And there was actually another sort of a salesperson in-house who had kind of some doubts about him, too. But then after, and they had just read Disappearing Nightly, but after I delivered Doppelganger, they changed their minds and went, okay, you nailed it. He's the right character. Love this character.
Well, he's got a little, he has to be the straight man, like a Ricky Ricardo to... to Esther, who is completely off the wall,
mm-hmm, yeah,
much like Lucy. So it works very, and of course he's Irish Cuban, and mm-hmm. So it just works so beautifully.
Something really fun is that the books have now been produced in audio. They've been doing that all year, releasing one a month. They just released the seventh one last month. It's a company called Graphic Audio, and it's just one of those happy serendipitous things, because when I first I love audiobooks, and of course, audio is the fastest-growing market for a writer now, because so many people are so busy, they're getting a lot of their reading done by listening as they go about their lives. So I really, really wanted to get the books in audio, and I found out about Graphic Audio a few years ago and was thinking, like, wow, this would be just the perfect format for Esther Diamond. They their tagline is, it's a movie in your mind. So they do the book, but they do it with multiple actors and sound effects and background music. So you kind of get this almost like a radio play effect of the book. And I thought, oh, this would just be perfect for Esther Diamond. And so I was thrilled. They made an offer on it, and I was so excited. But then the paperwork never came through, never came through. And after 6 months of, you know, following up and the paperwork's not coming through, found out they withdrew the offer. They just felt like it wasn't the right time or something. So it was really disappointing. And I spoke with Dot Books, and we looked around for another audio deal, and there was nothing forthcoming. And just around the time I was about to say, all right, forget it, it was like almost 2 years later, Graphic Audio came back, and they made an offer again. So this was the right time. And moved quickly this time, and it all has gone really well. And they've released 7 audiobooks in a row, and they've done just a fantastic job. The woman who directs the audio productions of Esther Diamond is an actress named Colleen Delaney. She also plays Esther Diamond. She plays her very well. She's cast a lot of the roles really well. And I was very nervous before the first one because so often an adaptation of your work is just awful. Just awful. Ask any writer. So often you just feel like, oh, now I'm depressed. But I heard the first one and was just so delighted with the way they had done it. And I think they've done a great job on all 7 of those. So people who prefer audiobooks or only have time for audiobooks, that's another way to enjoy the series now.
Oh, I'm going to get those. That sounds great because, of course, your writing is very visual. As I'm reading it, I see it because I'm a script writer. I see it as a movie anyway in my head. So listening to these Audible versions where they actually have different actors, I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, it works great. And they're made in Washington, D.C., which actually is a huge pool of really good actors. So there are even some actors in the productions who are, like, so good. I'm like, oh, I think I'm going to bring that character back because I really like that actor who's doing this character now. So they do a really good job. And I thought of it because the guy who plays Lopez, he's a very good actor. And, you know, that's a hard character to play amidst all the others because Lopez is, as you say, he's so often the straight man and he so often doesn't know what's going on and he so often... like he'll go through in the space of one scene because everything around him is so crazy. He'll go through like half a dozen emotional changes in a, you know, 5 or 10 minute scene. And this actor nails it. I think he does it really well. And one listener who reviewed the book wrote something like, I don't know if he's experimented with this, but I think technically his voice could melt butter. And I thought that was a great way of describing this actor's voice. He's a really sexy voice too, which helps.
Well, they have rich material to work with, because every character, you have such wonderful characters.
And thank you.
Of course, in The Doppelgangster, you know, I had thought that I could never read. I get so many books. They send them to me all the time, and I'm reading. And I thought, if I get one more Goodfella kind of book where I have to deal with the mafia, you know, I'm going to throw up. And then I get this book, and... wow, I thought you put a new light on everything. It's just so funny. I just love it.
You know, it's funny because I used to live in Sicily. That was actually where I started writing way back in the late 1980s.
I know your father told us that story. So
yeah,
maybe you should tell it to us quickly.
Well, I was very young. I was living over there. I had been living in England, and after 3 years, I thought, I got to get out of the rain. I cannot go through another cold, rainy summer. And I just looked around for what could I do in Italy, because I spoke Italian, and I applied for a job teaching English at the University of Palermo. I was totally unqualified for this, but way back in those days, it didn't matter. And so I got the job and went down to Sicily and lived there for a year, and it was an amazing year. It's an absolutely extraordinary place. But I was living in an apartment way out at the edge of town, and my neighborhood was pretty – it was a nice, nice apartment, but the neighborhood was pretty bad. And I didn't have a car, and public transport wasn't reliable. And I didn't have a phone. This was back before cell phones, and it would take up to a year to get a phone installed in an apartment in Italy. So I didn't have a phone or a TV. And after a while, I just got, after like a month or two, I had read like, you know, 20 books in a month or two, because that's all there was to do at home when I wasn't at work or out with friends. And so I just started writing, and I wrote by hand in notebooks, and then I found a typewriter, and it was, I think, like an Italian typewriter with the keys in the wrong place. It was manual, and the pages were also not the same size as American typewriter pages back then. So my word count was horribly off. My book was probably 10,000 words longer than I realized. And I typed up all of my handwritten notebooks. And then I took a train to Rome, which was where the nearest American or English language library was. So it was like a 26-hour journey round trip by train. But going to Rome is not a bad thing. I took a train to Rome so that I could look up publishers and literary agents to send this to. So things are a lot different in those days. But anyhow, living in Sicily in those days, the 1980s, and the mafia still controlled quite a bit. And that just kind of got me interested in them. And I started doing a lot of reading about them over the years. So that's sort of the origin of Doppelgangster, just the interest I developed in the mob from living there. And I had done some previous writing about the mafia, but very often, just because I like comedy, I had used a comedy perspective.
Well, it works, I can tell you. I want to tell everyone, they really should. I actually would tell everyone to start with this book, because once you read this book, you're going to have to read all of Laura Resnick's books. And now we're going to have to get all of the audio. So, because what I love is that you don't waste any characters. I mean, everybody has some dimension, and even like the newspaper seller. Now, no. I just love that when he came out with that line. What did he say after she?
It's something about a headline.
Yeah, she was in the headlines, and it said, "Singing server sees slaying. Singing server sees slaying," and you write. And the newspaper guy says that's some lovely alliteration, don't you think? And I, who else has writes that they're, you know, makes that newspaper guy real? I mean, that's what's the beauty. Well, of course, other than your father, who can make everybody real, you know. I mean, it's just so beautifully done.
Well, thank you, because my priority as a writer is characters. Like I have said before to literary agents, to whoever, I don't think I have terribly original ideas. I'm not one of the, because in science fiction and fantasy, you know, something you've never seen done before is what people often talk about. I'm not that kind of writer. I don't have ideas that no one's ever thought of before, or concepts no one's ever heard of. I don't have a writing style that's, you know, unlike any other. A writer who writes without punctuation, or a writer who writes in whatever, you know, second person. I don't do any of that, and I don't have like the most complex and intricate plots. You know, I'm not someone who you get to the last chapter and you still don't know who done it. I'm not like that either. I think what I'm best at is characters, and that's what I focus on the most when I write. So it's always good to hear that that has worked.
Well, I like what somebody wrote about you. Misadventures in Manhattan, Mystical Mayhem. I thought, what? That's right. She is. And it is brilliant writing, and I wish they would pick it up to do a television series, because this is so much better than Buffy.
Open your lips to God's ear. If they did that, I could pay off my house.
Well, they should, really, because when you look back at it, Buffy was very, you know, popular, but there was no humor in it. It wasn't, it didn't leave you with a good feeling. This one, first of all, I think so many women, could relate to Esther, because she's not perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, she gets herself into messes. Mm-hmm. And her hair is not always perfect, and she's not always dressed perfect. So I think so many women could really just love the program because of that. And then, of course, we have Connor, who we just, you know, really, it does melt in your mouth kind of the guy. And you know, I think it would make a wonderful TV series.
Well, I would be thrilled to death. So if only. But, the truth is, generally, things that get considered for TV or movies are already huge commercial successes. You know, like I wrote a traditional epic sword and sorcery fantasy trilogy in the vein of Game of Thrones. But George Martin is the person who had a fantasy series of that nature that was number one on all of the bestseller lists. So, you know, Game of Thrones is the level of sales that becomes this sort of super successful TV series. I had very, you know, average mid-list writer sales, so I've never been approached about anything like that at all. And it's kind of the same like this. Like, I think that, you know, people like in urban fantasy, people like, Charlene Harris with her vampire series, that was making number one on a lot of bestseller lists, so it gets made into a series. And, you know, again, I have very average mid-list sales, so...
Well, we will keep talking it up, and people out there, everybody, go and get Laura Resnick's book. Get the Doppelgangster first, and then read all of the other ones, and get that Audible. Let's make that Audible a best-selling. And I want to thank you, Laura, so much for being on your birthday, and happy
birthday
again. And I would like you to come back, because you wrote another book called Rejection, Romance and Royalties, The Wacky World of Working Writer. And I would love for you to come back on for a half an hour and talk about that, okay?
Okay, that would be great.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And next time you see your dad, give him a hug for me, because I love him. Okay?
Okay, will do.
Okay, happy birthday. Thanks again.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye-bye now. Okay, we're going to go to commercial, and then we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
Mike is offering 50% off his 4-pack special.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-871-1543 and use the promo code PATSY, and Mike will offer you free shipping. Once again, that's 800-871-1543, promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Phyllis Piano. Hi, Phyllis. Are you there?
I am.
Okay. Well, there are so many wonderful things to say about you, Phyllis. I know that, of course, you were an award-winning corporate communications expert for some of the world's largest companies. You wrote an absolutely fantastic book called Hostile Takeover that I know won awards. And I loved that book when it came out. And your new book is Love Reconsidered. But for me, the most important thing is that you are a cheesehead. Welcome to Joy on Paper, cheesehead.
Thank you.
Okay, well,
I can't deny it. I'm a cheesehead, and I'm also a shareholder in the Green Bay Packers. So, yeah, and in fact, I was at Lambeau Field last week. The book came out last week, and I did the launch in my hometown in Milwaukee.
I saw that.
It went up to Green Bay, and oh my God, it was so fun.
They're so excited for, you know, I'm a youper. That's why cheesehead.
Okay.
Well, you know, of course, you know, we youpers just love you cheeseheads. We love when you come driving up to the Upper Peninsula and then we see your license plate and then I don't know. You always seem to be going fast, and then we have to stop you and give you a ticket.
Well, you know what's interesting? Of course, I grew up in Wisconsin. We used to go skiing in the UP all the time. So we kind of feel almost like natives up there in the UP.
Oh, yeah. No, we're cousins. We're kissing cousins.
We are.
But you people from Wisconsin got more money than we do up in the UP. And if you get a few traffic tickets once in a while, what's the problem?
Well, we certainly enjoyed our time up there, and it was great being back in Wisconsin and talking about the book and launching it. It was just terrific.
And you had great weather. My son is at Madison. He's studying biomedical engineering there. He's working on his PhD. So we're talking to Wisconsin every day.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a great school. And you probably saw my last company was I worked in Amgen, which is the leader in biotechnology. So
you know what it means. Yeah, it's exciting.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Good luck to him in that career and looking for cures for many, many diseases. Hopefully he'll be working on that once he graduates.
Oh, that's what he's doing. And he's already had so many wonderful papers published, and we're so proud of him. And he loves it there in Madison. He loves the entire, you know, area. It's just he's really enjoying it.
It's a great town. It's a fantastic town. And every time I go to Wisconsin, well, it's home for me. So when I go back there, it's just terrific.
And we have another connection of sorts because your husband is from England.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny. I'm a Youper, but all my life, I've been reading books since I was born, practically. And I was always, you know, obsessed with British books, and I was reading, you know, the Brontes and Jane Austen and, you know, Charles Dickens and everybody. And as soon as I had enough money, when I was about 21 years old, I had enough money, I bought a cottage in England, about 20 miles from Jane Austen's birthplace.
Yes.
And I bought one of these old 400-year-old cottages. So I lived for many years in England. And so so I know what it's like there. And I know you spend quite a bit of time in England.
I do. And interesting you should mention Jane Austen, because that's a real inspiration to me. And I also, you know, in my career worked a lot in England, too, you know, just because we always had operations around the world. And, of course, my husband's from there, so we have family and friends all over. But a woman who's a dear, dear friend and her husband live near the Jane Austen house. And I went there last year.
Oh!
And I tell you, I was in awe. I went and right next to the desk where she wrote, you know, all of her famous books, and, you know, toured the cottage and saw her things, and she talks about gardens and everything. This was her garden. I tell you, it was just a fantastic experience for me to go there. So, and there's so many places in England that we like to travel and see, and every time we go over, and we'll be headed over there soon, and I'm planning on bringing my third book and doing some final editing on that. So I try to discipline myself and be able to write around the world. In fact, Love Reconsidered was written on three continents because I write here. You know, we live most of the time in California, but I spend time in the Midwest. And then also in England, I wrote some there, and I had one of those significant birthdays and went to Australia and New Zealand and did quite a bit of work on the book there. So that's my three-continent book, is Love Reconsidered.
Well, of course, Love Reconsidered just came out, and you've already had book launch in Milwaukee. I think you had one in California, and you're off tomorrow to England?
Not tomorrow, but soon.
Soon.
And then I'm actually going to do... kind of a book event in London, and then I have some other ones back in the States. Yeah, so it's been a lot of fun so far, and I had a real blast writing this book because it's so different from the first one.
It is. It's a very complicated book in many ways. A very touching book. I never like to give away too much about a book to people because I never know if you say something, then they'll say, oh, well, I'm not going to read it, but they're missing out. You know, sometimes you give away. I've been really upset with Amazon recently because so often they're giving away too much. I already know, you know, most of the book before I've ever opened it. But Love Reconsidered, of course, is a very touching book. It's about, you know, grief and loss and second chances, which I think is something that's important to you.
Yes. Yes. That's the theme. I think, you know, hope and forgiveness and friendship and are all kind of themes. And you think about these two, you know, families that are broken apart, really, and how they come back together. I would say hope and forgiveness and second chances are really, really, really important in this book. And it's actually set on Lake Sherwood, which is where, you know, we live. And I was inspired to write it because on a road where I would drive every day, I would see these flowers by the tree. You see them around the world as tributes to people who were killed near the spot. And I would go by there every day, and the flowers, and there were candles in there. And I thought, gosh, whoever was killed here was so well loved. And I actually found out it was a 19-year-old young man on a motorcycle, and that's all I wanted to know. Because in my book, I made him.
Well, your book really takes the families and expands on a very complicated relationship and stories behind the event. And again, one of the great things about your writing, as I enjoyed Hostile Takeover, you are very good at developing characters and making the reader really understand them and care about them, which is so important.
Well, thank you for that. I really, really, really appreciate that. I find it fun to just live with these characters and try and develop them and think the way that they would think, which is different than, you know, I would think. And you have to kind of put yourself outside of yourself to try and think, you know, well, what would this character do? You know, it's not anything that I would do, but what would this character do and how would they feel? And I was gratified the night before last. I did a book event at the Barnes & Noble here in Thousand Oaks, and one of the people who read the book said, it developed in a different way than I thought. It ended differently than I thought. And I thought that was great, because I hope that there's some surprises and some twists and turns and things that you can't anticipate. And to your point, she didn't say anything that gave away any of the plot. But I really appreciated that from her, that she was a bit surprised.
Well, I was too, and I did enjoy that aspect of it. I get really, you know, I get a lot of books, and I read a lot of books, and I get bored after a while if I start feeling that I know exactly what's going to happen. And with your book, I didn't, and I enjoy that part.
So good.
It was like this suspense of what is actually going to happen to this family.
Well, and in the book, as you know, football Sundays and home cooking and corgi dogs are part of the healing. And it's an interesting story. The house in the book is actually my friend's house, not our house, on Lake Sherwood. And the dogs are actually her dogs. And I worked with her in... she did an assignment in Switzerland, and she brought the dogs with her. They were called Hope and Cash, as they are in the book. And we saw them over there in Switzerland. Of course, we saw them here in California. And unfortunately, Hope got sick with cancer and died in Switzerland. Cash came back and lasted a couple years, but, you know, without his compadre. He died as well. But she got two new corgi dogs, called Cricket and Ted, and they are just the same personalities, and we love them, and we see them at her house, and we see them when they come over here, and just like Hope and Cash, we love them. So the dogs in the book are based on real dogs.
Well, they add dimension to the story, and very, very important dimension to it, the story.
I do think in the case of when you experience grief, and we've all experienced it in different ways, that there would just seem to be some things that are core. And that's, I think in this particular case, losing a child would be one where in, the characters do reach out for help, whether it's through friendship or professional counselor. And in the father's case, getting the dog.
Okay, let's not tell too much of the story. Let's not tell. We'll keep this for the readers to find out. That's my
okay.
My feeling is that readers should approach the story and just start. And then once they start, they won't want to stop. That's my feeling.
Well, I sure hope not.
You know, of course, this is. I'm sorry. What did you say?
Different people deal with grief differently. And one of the things that where I probably put some of myself into the story, although this is totally a fictional story, is I love to cook. And uh-huh. So you may have noticed that that the people in the story cook and they have and they have dinners and
That again it gives to the richness of the story of your writing.
When I love to put that in there, and I also you'd appreciate this. I taught myself after I left the corporate world. I taught myself how to bake, and when I was in England, my husband got these books out of the Sunday paper, and it's a guy named Paul Hollywood who bakes, and I started baking all of his different recipes, but I got to the part about sourdough, and you needed your own sourdough starter, so I used this recipe and built my own sourdough starter and started baking homemade sourdough bread, and I know I'm going to do a book about baking in there sometime, and I tend to bring the bread to my book events and give it away.
Oh, that's perfect. I love that.
And but I love to bake it. I love the baking but part of it's the learning, isn't it? Experiencing something new. So I did it. I built my own sourdough starter and I have it here.
I love Paul Hollywood because do you watch the Great British Baking Show?
Yes, I watch it in the UK before it's here.
Oh, well, I'm sure they would love if you would go up there next time when they're having the event. Huh?
That would be a blast because I didn't learn a lot about baking. No, I can't do anything like they do on the show, except I will say this. When they had the baguette day, my baguettes were better.
Uh-huh.
That's the only thing, because those people are so talented. They are so beyond anything I could ever do.
Well, as a matter of fact,
the baguettes.
When my son comes down, he's going to come down in a few weeks, I've taped the show, and I'm going to let him select one of those challenges, and I'm going to challenge him. I'm going to do it, and he's going to do it, and we're going to see which one of us does it better.
Oh, you should do a video.
Yeah. Isn't that going to be cute?
I thought that
would be fun. Something different. I've never thought of doing that, but I thought, well, you know, he doesn't cook a lot because, of course, you know, he can make my tuna salad and tuna casserole. But I thought if I could pick one thing that he could learn to do, and I think that's a good way to get him to do it.
Oh, that'll be a blast. And you probably noticed, too, I do a lot of recipes on my website. I think cooking is a lot like writing. I do, because you're being creative. I can never follow a recipe. I'm always tweaking it around and trying to change it up. So I think writing and cooking are about creating.
Well, you get the ingredients, and you put in a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and you come out with something great at the end.
You hope so.
Well, in your case, with your books, you certainly have. And as I wanted to tell people, too, that everyone will enjoy Hostile Takeover. I think that's a great book.
Well, thank you. And you know what? I had that while I was working. I talked to a woman who worked for me and told her the whole plot probably 10 years ago. I had it in my head that long. And so I didn't really have a chance until I was not working full time to do it. And I just had so much fun writing that. It was just a blast and so different from Love Reconsidered. But I, you know, it's a romance and, you know, it's a love story and it was just fun. And, you know, I put a little bit of the business stuff in there, not too much, but I did work on a lot of takeovers so I could use that that knowledge in the book.
And it works. I think It's a delightful book.
Oh, I'm so glad you liked it. I had a lot of fun doing it, and a couple of the readers said, are you going to do a sequel? And I could, but I have so many things on my list. I don't know when I'll be able to get to it, but I do have a storyline in my head.
Well, of course, that was your first book. How did you find an agent?
Well, you know what? I actually started out by, and you may know my college friend who really advised me is an author named Chris Radish, who doesn't live too far from you. She's in St. Petersburg, and I went to college with Chris, and when I really thought about, and she's had tons of books and written a lot, and when I thought about writing, I thought, gosh, I'm going to call Chris and get her advice. And she was really, really helpful to me. She suggested an editor, and I really couldn't have gotten started without her. And so I had somebody who was already an author to help advise me, which was very, very helpful.
Well, because it's always difficult to break into the business. But I can see that your book actually would get noticed by an agent, because it was just a good book. Right, right from page one, I recognize that this was something that would click with people.
Well, I'm so glad and happy to hear you say that, because I really like doing this. As I said, I have a list a mile long. My third book is already done. I want to tweak a couple characters over my travel time, and I've started my fourth book as well. And I want to keep going. It's fun, and it's a dream come true.
Well, that's a wonderful thing about writing, that once you start it, you really can't stop, because you get that bug in you that you have all these things that you want to say, and you know that there is that joy. That's why I call this joy on paper. There is that joy that you get when you put the words down and you see them. Wow, it's magical, isn't it?
It is magical, and thanks to you for doing a show like this and showcasing authors. It's so wonderful, and thank you so much for doing it, because, as you know, it's very hard to break through, to get attention to your work, because there's so much out there.
That's true, and the important thing is that, you know, what I do, what I try to do is I try not just to talk to writers, this program is for writers, I reach out to readers. I try to contact groups and organizations, because I want to bring readers in. I want more people to read, more people to see and to feel that joy on paper. And one of the ways I've discovered is when I talk to people and I say, well, you probably have a book that you want to write, a book about maybe an idea or maybe your family or whatever. But to learn how to write, you have to read good books. And then I bring them in and I say, well, these are the authors that you should be reading, because these will give you the background that you need in good writing, so that when you try to write, you can, you know, have something to fall back on.
Well, I was lucky in my career in that my job was about writing. And so from the time I really started in corporate America, I was writing. In fact, my first corporate job was writing, editing, laying out, and producing all on my own the newsletter every 2 weeks. And so I was writing articles, and then later on I was writing speeches, I was writing internal web articles, I was writing press releases, I was writing constantly. And it's a different kind of writing, but it does have a discipline in terms of, you know, understanding how to write a great sentence, and it's storytelling. And I think that's the part that I really, really enjoyed, because you're always telling a story, and I just have all these stories in my head. But I do understand what you talk about in terms of encouraging folks. It was interesting. I was at the doctor yesterday, just a routine appointment, and the physician's assistant saw my book in my bag, and we started talking, and she told me she has been taking notes for years and years and wants to write a memoir and a story about from her family. I'm telling you, it was fantastic, her work. Like you say, there's so many people have stories. So I said, well, listen, when you decide you want to do it, call me and I'll offer any advice that I can.
Well, that's what I do. I tell people, I tell them to go to my Facebook, contact me on my webpage, because I will help anybody who wants to start. And I do like to work, with veterans and with, and I believe teenagers should write. I think one of the best ways to get into university is if a teenager has a book, on their resume. So I just, once they start writing, then they start being even bigger readers.
Well, you know what? I'm going to tell someone you said that because I had to actually go for a blood draw, and the woman drawing my blood's daughter is 19 and is writing a book and wants to talk to me. And I said, anytime. I think this is terrific, and she's still in school, and it's exactly as you say. I mean, to start that young, fantastic. I'm sure she's going to be a great writer. It's interesting, though. I started to write a book when I was really young, and it was so terrible I put it aside. I'm one of those people, I think, I really needed the life experience and to be able to draw upon, and that's made it more fun for me. But if somebody that young, is 19, could write a book, boy, she's going to be good.
Well, I just had a 17-year-old here who had started her book on the Internet. She had 30 million hits, 30 million people. She got a contract, by the way.
Oh, good for her.
Okay.
Good for her. And I'm very excited to see young people get into writing. I really, really am. And I like the joy on paper. I think sometimes because of all my travels, I tend to put the books, take the books electronically, but it's just not as much fun as holding it in your hand.
Exactly. Well, I want to thank you so much today for being on Joy on Paper. Phyllis Piano, and you have a nice website. People can go there to see more about you and your plans and your books. And Phyllis, I just want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye now. And have you back. We'll have you back when the next book comes out, okay?
I am excited about that. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Wow. She's nice. I like her. The book, I think you will really enjoy it. Now, remember that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper. That's what I was just talking to Phyllis about. And so take some time this weekend and read and write and dream, if nothing else. And meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. And this is Patsy with a Z, hoping that you will say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed because he's always so good. And he's looking so good, and I want to thank him, and he salutes me, and I will salute him back because I love being saluted. I should have been in the Army. Okay, bye for now. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.